Welcome back to Queer Lehigh Valley. We're here today with Sid for a special Halloween-themed episode. I'm very excited about that. It's great that Halloween, spooky month, also falls on LGBTQ History Month, so I feel like there's a lot of cool opportunities to weave stuff together. But I'm your host, Robin Gao. I use it, fey, and he, him pronouns, and I'll let Sid introduce himself too.
Hi, I'm Sid, and I use they, them pronouns.
So I thought that we would start by just like talking about our own relationships to horror, monsters, all things scary as they relate to queerness. My first question is, can you tell us about a first horror movie that you connected with, either as a queer person or just a person? I think that as we'll dive into the show, we're really focusing on how queer people relate to horror and monsters. So I thought that that could be a cool starting point.
I'm going to go with the really easy answer, which was when I originally saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show when I was in middle school, early high school. I could not get enough of it. Me and my little freak friend group all rewatched it over and over and would like shadow cast it in my basement.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so pretty classic answer.
That's amazing. I wore my Frankenfurter earrings today.
I noticed.
I was trying to go with the theme. It's interesting. I actually didn't see Rocky Horror for the first time until I was in college. And I was very lucky that I was in a friend group who was very steeped in Rocky Horror. So my first experience was with a full shadow cast and with all the props and stuff.
Incredible.
I had a friend who was like very dedicated to making the prop bags. And it was a really beautiful, strange, wonderful experience.
Yeah,
that definitely stands out as like a very queer horror. Interestingly enough, for myself, I think the first movies that I connected with were not necessarily queer. I think the first horror movie I was like obsessed with was The Blair Witch Project, which I don't necessarily think reads as especially queer, other than that like monsters and witches kind of give a vibe. Yeah. But I don't necessarily think that necessarily reads as that queer to me. But you talking about Rocky Horror made me think of just like a monster slash villain icon that I'm obsessed with, which is him from Powerpuff Girls.
Yes.
Because I definitely feel like he's very similar to Frankenfurter in that like he's wonderfully evil, clearly genderqueer, and messing with gender in a really fun and sometimes like scary way. I also remember being like a little bit scared of him. And that definitely is a character that resonates when we're talking about, like, things that I was connected to.
I definitely liked a lot of generally spooky things, not even necessarily horror movies. So, yeah, I definitely connected with him a lot. And similar characters that maybe popped up in cartoons and things like that growing up.
When you talk about, like, other generally spooky things, what are some things that, like, you connected to as a kid?
I always loved like the Halloween specials of my favorite shows. So I remember when I first started watching like Disney Channel, like the Halloween episode of Lizzie McGuire stuck with me, like the Dia de los Muertos one, where they scare the bully with like the skeletons and get back at her for being like kind of prejudiced towards Miranda. And that was really incredible. And I just kind of latched onto other things like that, like Courage, the Cowardly Dog was always especially spooky, things like that.
Oh, I loved that show. I was like a very much like a cartoon-based kid, and so Courage was like definitely my thing. I love like especially the like older like weird cartoons. I feel like I've been exposed to cartoons for kids because I like have other young people in my life, and I feel like a lot of them are missing some of the like strangeness and horror that was present in kids' cartoons when I was a kid.
I've always gravitated towards the more weird ones or, like, complex plot-wise.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, my favorite show of all time is Adventure Time, so that's the kind of thing I gravitate towards.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Why do you feel like that is, like, as queer people or just as people?
I think something like being weird or other is especially comforting, and some of that stuff I think, just has like a nostalgic feel to it a lot of the time. And that's why it's very comforting as well.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. I think I remembered, this is like a very strange and strange quality of myself as a kid, but I used to collect rubber rats from Halloween stores.
Beautiful.
And I would name them all after cheeses. So it would be like cheddar and gorgonzola. And they were like super scary looking rats. But I was like, they're my friends. And I think that the reason why I like gravitated towards things that were scary is that like, usually underneath the scariness, I feel like I was connecting to something. And I feel like queer people or people who are othered are generally demonized or like cast off from society. And I think that that always made me feel like a tenderness towards that.
Yeah. Like I like a little weirdo. Yeah. Because I want, like, you deserve love and friendship.
Yeah, for sure.
I think also in my background, it was actually very much a family thing. Mm. A lot of people talk about bonding over like Christmas and the holidays, which like we did too, but Halloween was actually a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. Like my Mimi hated touching like the guts of a pumpkin, but I wanted to carve pumpkins as a little kid, so she like dealt with it for me. Things like that. And my mom would do like handmade costumes like at home, and my Mimi always, I think, also gravitated towards like weird stuff. So she always had the Sci-Fi Network on.
Oh, yeah.
The Twilight Zone was a big deal in my home. Like, she loved old, like, sci-fi horror stuff. So I think that also instilled a love in me.
Yeah. That's really cool. I actually relate a lot to that. But my family is very much like a Halloween was the primary holiday. And we would talk, like, all year about, like, what you wanted to be for Halloween. And we did make costumes, too, which I think is super fun. And I think that folks who don't try are totally missing out. Because even if it's, like, a wonky-looking costume, like, it's still, like, cool. I made this thing.
I love a handmade, like, off-the-wall, like, unique. That's the thing, like, Bob's Burgers Halloween episodes are one of my favorite things to watch every year. And I love, one of my favorite parts of those is that the Belchers always make like a homemade costume for the kids, and they're always like some silly pun or something, and I think it's so fun.
Yeah, I feel that. Do you have any like standout costumes from when you were a kid that you can think of?
When I was a kid, she reused this one dress a few years in a row, so it was like a witch dress and a vampire dress and then like something else.
Amazing.
Too. But I was actually, to bring it back around to Powerpuff Girls, I was Blossom the one year.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and she, like, made the little dress for me because she was like, this is easy. Mm-hmm. I don't need to buy that.
Yeah,
she just,
for
like,
sure.
Got me the
it's
mask.
Just a tube.
Yeah, truly, with a stripe. That one was cool that she made it. She also made me, like, a glow-in-the-dark ghost once.
Aww.
I don't know. There was just a lot of fun ones. And I always wanted, almost always, wanted to be something actually scary.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, annoyed when kids would go as, like, princesses and stuff.
Oh, I see, I see.
I was like,
you're a
come
purist.
On. Come on. Like, yes, I did go as Blossom and Baby Bop one year, but that was, like, the younger years.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. By the time you matured, you knew that it was time for evil.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I was, what's the green Powerpuff Girl?
Buttercup.
Buttercup. I was Buttercup.
Nice.
And then my dad dressed up as the professor, and my uncle dressed up as Mojo
That's
Jojo.
That's cute.
And I took him around the town on a chain, and it was very fun.
Love it.
My whole family would get involved and get really super into it.
I wish we'd done that, but I just don't think my parents were, like, up for putting on a costume.
That's fair. I don't think my mom would be. My dad definitely, I mean, my dad does war reenactment now, so he just, that's, like, a little, like, a step up from, you know, Halloween costumes, but he would get into it with me, and it was definitely fun.
Yeah. When I got older and I didn't trick-or-treat anymore, my brother's 6 years younger than me, so, like, I would be like, oh, well, I want to help take him trick-or-treating because, like, I wanted to still be able to go even if I wasn't collecting candy. But then sometimes I'd dress up with him to do that, like Finn and Marceline from Adventure Time
the
one year. Yeah,
I love that. So one of my questions was, do you still dress up for Halloween?
Yes.
For me, it's always been a place to, like, explore gender and gender identity. Has it ever been the same for you? What does dressing up mean to you?
I think so, yeah. I love dressing up for Halloween and various other things. So I always think that's so fun to explore the gender expression, but also makeup skills, special effects, like costume making abilities. Like, I think it's just fun as like an art form in general. But I definitely think I've like had costumes in the past where I was like, I want this to be kind of androgynous, mm-hmm. just because like I need to express that. Mm-hmm. Or like specifically queer costumes. Mm-hmm. Like my ex-girlfriend and I were like Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn the 1 year, because I was like, we have to be this lesbian couple.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. When I think about gender identity and Halloween costumes, I think the first year after I came out as trans, I was like struggling to figure out what I wanted to be for Halloween. And it felt really healing to be, I was Max from Where the Wild Things Are. And I think it was like an opportunity to like experience like a little bit of a boyhood, because yes. like Halloween is like a place where you can put on something and people aren't going to think that you're weird, because mm-hmm. that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. and I was in college at the time, but I dressed up as Max for all my classes, and it was a really fun time.
It's cute.
I wish I still had the costume, because it was like pretty involved. He has a very fun costume, and it was very practical. So it was very cold at the time, and I was like, yeah, I'm in my like nice.
It's like really onesie. Cozy to wear around school.
Yeah. But it was really nice to be able to like experience that. And I think in the subsequent years that I've done similar things. I think I've definitely fallen off with dressing up. I always have like a vision. And then if I have a party or something that I am going to, I'll be like, okay, I have to lock in because I have to complete this. And yes. if not, it will remain a vision. I'm not quite as ambitious as I was as a kid. As a kid, I would be like drawing up things mm-hmm. and like pushing them across the table to my parents like very early on.
Yeah.
I think it got the most wild like when I hit middle school, because I started to do like original characters, mm-hmm. which is fun. But also it was, I think that was right before I got into like cosplay and stuff.
Makes sense.
I wanted to weave in some stuff about monster stories too, or like family horror stories. Did your family tell scary stories when you were a kid? Or do you like to tell scary stories?
I think scary stories are fun. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love watching movie or show formats where mm-hmm. it's like a couple, like anthologies, and different scary stories. My parents didn't necessarily tell scary stories as scary stories. My mom just had some like things that happened at one point mm-hmm. where she would tell us about those encounters. And I thought they were fascinating, but also kind of scary. So I think those are cool to just have. But there were definitely like slumber parties mm-hmm. where like people were telling their different encounters or their mm-hmm. family stories, or the classics of like the babysitter and the clown statue.
Oh, yeah,
or
yeah.
like the dog licking your hand. And I just love those silly little tales. I also really got into like creepypastas and things
gosh,
like
I
that
was
at one point.
With those.
Yeah. So anything like that, I love.
Yeah. Me and my friends would read those in our like high school library and just like. get really scared. And like I've actually, interestingly enough, like returned to them fairly recently, and I didn't find them as scary, but I think that sometimes horror has to do with like also being around other people,
yeah,
and being like collectively scared, because I don't usually get as scared alone, but I'm sure it will be different depending on the media.
That's so fair.
My last question for like our first little half before we go to our break is, what do you think the connection has been between like your queer identity formation and horror / monsters / scary stuff?
I think, like I said, I liked horror and had that with my family. But then I think when I discovered Rocky Horror and then the friend group that I had after that, who also fell in love with it when I like showed it to them, that was super important, because, you know, in hindsight, that group was full of queer people.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though we didn't all know it and mm-hmm. weren't all out at the time. I remember playing around with gender expression then, with like dressing up to go see Rocky Horror and like having our own parties where we were dressing up and just like not judging each other, and doing theater as well. Mm-hmm. Then beyond that, just exploring the themes of queerness in horror and relating to them mm-hmm. and just like thinking about that a lot as I engage with horror. Mm-hmm. And like Scream is my favorite movie. Initially, I just really enjoyed it for like what it was. But over time, like I've really picked up on the queer undertones with our villains from that first one.
Yeah.
And the screenwriter and the writer for the films, Kevin Williamson, is a gay man himself and, like, came out later after, I believe after that movie was successful, he was able to come out. And finding that that's kind of a reoccurring theme in horror as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like, even back with some of the classics with, I think his name's John Whale. And then even with, like, the Child's Play franchise. Like,
for sure.
Yeah, Don Mancini is queer and has put that into a lot of those films as well. So I also find connection there.
Yeah, I love that. I relate to a lot of the things that you said. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about queer history of spooky stuff, horror, and all things Halloween-ish.
Yay.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Hi, everybody. It's Robin here with Queer Lehigh Valley, talking to Sid, and we're talking about queerness and horror. I wanted to jump back in from our little break with some of the stuff that I love to think about with queerness and horror that has to do with our queer history. I started to really think about this. I think the first time I read a book by Leslie Feinberg, who's like a trans activist, super cool human, who did a lot of advocacy for trans folks, especially like non-binary genderqueer folks. And in their book, I think it's called Transgender Warriors, they have like a whole chapter where they talk about Halloween in New York and how significant it was for them. Because at the time period, there were still anti-cross-dressing laws on the books. And so an anti-cross-dressing law, they're all a little bit different, but essentially it meant that you like had to be wearing a certain amount of articles of clothing related to your assigned gender at birth to like not be breaking the law. But that didn't really apply on Halloween. And so Halloween, especially in New York City, but I would imagine across the country, became a really significant day. And they were describing this as like this like one moment of freedom. And I thought that that was interesting to tie into some of the stuff that we were talking about earlier, both you talking about moments where just like wanting to express some sort of androgyny with a character. I always have thought of like Halloween in that same way that they described it. And they were talking about their experience in the 80s and 90s. But I resonated really deeply, even growing up in a pretty different time period. And so building off of some of that, I wanted to talk a little bit about, like, what does queer horror look like today? What are some of your favorite, like, modern queer horror movies? And I also want to note that, like, exploring what queerness means in horror, I have always found difficult. Because there are many movies that I find queer that aren't, like, explicitly, like, a gay couple. but we could dive into that. Let's start off with what we think are some really cool ones that are popular today.
I do just want to echo you with that, like, being difficult to kind of talk about, because I post silly little videos online about horror movies, and I find that when we talk about queer horror, a lot of people come out of nowhere with a lot of big opinions about, like, what is queer, what isn't, and I do find sometimes people think queer horror is just, oh, there's a explicitly queer person in it, but I don't define it that way. I think queer themes or themes that are relatable to a large amount of queer people, like othering, right? And things like that. So one of my favorite queer undertone horrors of recent time is actually The Lighthouse.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I believe Robert Eggers has even talked about how, like, that's very much intentional in the film.
Yeah.
Between, like, Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe. And I just think they did an incredible job with that kind of chemistry in that movie. And that goes beyond queerness, too, which is why I think it's so interesting, because part of what gives it that queerness is this kind of fight between them that is centered around kind of toxic masculinity, but also kind of Robert Pattinson's character almost wanting to be Willem Dafoe's character. And then there's, like, intentionally a lot of phallic imagery in the film that lends itself to that. So I just think it's a really cool movie in general. Not everyone likes it, but part of it is because I find it really fascinating in that way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I definitely relate to that in that, like, a lot of my favorite movies that I would consider, like, queer horror are not explicitly queer. I'm trying to think of which one to talk about. I love the movie Hereditary. Mm-hmm. I think, like, the theme of, like, familial, like, unbelonging feels like it resonates with queerness in some way. I mean, I think in a lot of ways the movie's just about trauma, but I think that there's something weird going on with gender. That's, like, my definition for, like, what makes a movie a queer horror film is, like,
sure.
There's something, even if it's not explicitly, like, this is queer or this is about another person, there's something pushing up against, like, societal norms, which is interesting because that's kind of what I think horror should do as a genre.
Right.
So I find it fascinating because a lot of times people will get very different things out of horror movies. But what I often connect to is that, like, feeling of other. Another movie that I think about is, like, Nosferatu, which is, like, very clearly a, like, I mean, I think from far back, people would think that that's just, like, a heterosexual, like, love story. But, like, she's, like, obsessed with, like, a monster who is, like, right. a corpse. Like,
yeah.
This is not a man.
And she's, like, horrified by the fact that she feels that way.
Yeah, so it becomes a story about inner darkness, forbidden love, forbidden desire, which feels queer to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then also other people's reactions to her, like, emotions and feelings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also felt queer to me in some way, in that, like, there's a tension between the ways in which this, like, obsession ripples through how other people perceive her and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that that's another Robert Eggers movie, too.
I love Robert Eggers.
I do, too.
I was trying to, like, censor myself to not only talk about... I also love Ari Aster films. His movies are not explicitly queer, but are deeply strange, and I think that's probably what gets to it for me. Other than movies, are there authors that you gravitate towards? I love books also.
I love books.
I thought that could be a cool place.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of horror authors are, like, some of my favorites. So, like, T. Kingfisher is one, and a lot of her books have queer undertones and also, like, autistic undertones.
Yeah, for sure.
And I just really like the way she writes her characters and, like, her worlds and, like, how weird they are sometimes. Yeah. And also some of them do have, like, a non-binary main character as well. So really love T. Kingfisher. And
I loved their retelling of The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah, that's the one.
I think that was cool because I loved Edgar Allan Poe from the time I was, like, very little. Mm-hmm. And so it was exciting to see, like, a revision that explore gender and also, like, because it makes sense. The Fall of the House of Usher is, like, the fall of a family system.
Right.
And, like, the literal dismantling of a house. And so I loved what they brought to that story because it didn't just feel like a redo of it. It felt like a complete reimagining. And, I mean, there's other elements of the horror that, like, changed it from the Edgar Allan Poe version. But I loved that book of theirs. I don't know if I've read anything else by them, but
that's the first one I read, which is what kept me going. And now I've branched out even from the horror that they write to the fantasy as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it's really like it.
Mm-hmm. I think for favorite authors that I can think of right now, I love Chuck Tingle.
oh, I just read the new one.
Oh, really? I haven't yet. So for listeners who's not aware, Chuck Tingle writes across many different genres, including, like, erotic books that are incredibly strange. Yeah. And then also he writes queer horror books, essentially.
Incredible.
And they really do directly tackle queer themes, unlike some of the other things that we've been talking about. Oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the name of one of the most recent
ones? Bury Your Gaze.
Yes, Bury Your... I read that one. And that one is really directly exploring queerness and, like, what it means to produce queer media through the lens of horror. And so I definitely think of him when I think of, like, what is, like, queer horror like today.
Oh, yeah.
And I find it interesting, too, that horror often touches humor, like, in a way that other...
Yes.
Like, they're two sides of the same kind of thing. And I'm not sure exactly what that is, but he definitely is playing with that. And you can tell that
very
from,
well, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think that that's about?
It's a good question because I often, my favorite things are when it's horror and humor mm-hmm. combined. I think it's very difficult to do well, mm-hmm. but when someone does, ooh, it just hits. I think it's because, like, queer folks have to deal with varying horrific things as mm-hmm. queer folks. And so I think being able to have some lightness brought mm-hmm. to that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, I mean, most queer people I know are also very funny. Because they just, like, take what's happening and they got to joke about it. We got to joke about it, or what do we have?
I feel like it's a tool of survival to, like, joke through the horrors. Mm-hmm. And I love when that comes out in our media. Mm-hmm. But I definitely do think that that's, like, a very – I mean, I think it's true for a lot of marginalized communities that there is, like, a theme of – you have to make very dark humor in order to process the scary things or the hard things. And you're right. It's, like, not easy to strike that balance. Mm-hmm. But when it works, it works really well. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot more often, too. I also, like, have you read Manhunt?
I haven't.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. But I think that that book engages in that a little bit.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's more of, like, an apocalypse kind of thing.
I know the premise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard to explain the premise in a short period of time, so I will save the listeners that. But that's another book that is a trans author who's exploring end-of-the-world scenarios, mm-hmm. scary stuff, violence, but also, like, satire a little bit about some of our current states of policing and gender and stuff like that.
I love when that's, like, hit mm-hmm. on the head.
So we talking, obviously, like, horror a lot. What would you say to somebody who's, like, maybe, like, nervous about trying horror, who's also a queer person, who's like, I don't know if that's for me. I don't think that we're here to, like, convert people, but I do think that a lot of times people might have a perception of horror and scary things as being, like, just the shock factor or just to upset you. But I personally use them more than anything else to grapple with the world. I think that, like, the more we've seen a lot of struggles for queer people, I've found myself turning almost exclusively to watch horror movies as a way of processing stuff. So what would we tell folks who haven't tried?
I would say go sit down and watch Jennifer's Body and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And maybe scream and then thank me later.
I love that. I would make people watch Hellraiser.
That's fair.
It is a little bit goopy, but
it is goopy.
But I think that it's also a good, if you're looking for something older, you want a place to start.
I just know that, like, my friend who has had a hard time getting into horror, who is queer, watched Jennifer's Body and then was like, I think this is one of my favorite movies, even though I don't like horror.
That's really
good. Which is why that pops into my head right away. Mm-hmm. I think it's great as, like, another one of those ones that can be a little funny at moments. Mm-hmm. And while also being kind of scary, but there's levity and it's very gay.
Yeah. Well, now folks have a good place to start. I appreciate all the time you've shared with me where we can talk about queerness and horror. We could probably talk for a billion other hours about every single movie.
It's my favorite.
But I hope that folks get a chance to have a lovely queer Halloween. And I really recommend people research a little bit about some of the queer history in Halloween. It's like a generational convening point for queer folks and for, like, really tangible reasons, because of anti-cross-dressing laws, because of, like, not always feeling like you can dress like yourself. I think that it's a great way to celebrate the end of LGBTQ+ History Month to celebrate Halloween. So I'm Robin Gao, and this has been QLV.